Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation Fourth Quarter 2014 Results Release Conference Call and Webcast. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I'd like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, February 12, 2015, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the presentation over to Sean McCaughan, Vice President of Investor Relations and Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Sherritt International Corporation Fourth Quarter 2014 and Year-End 2014 Results Conference Call. Our results were released earlier this morning, and a copy of the press release along with the MD&A and full financial statements are available on our website at www.sherritt.com. Also available on the website is an accompanying presentation on the quarterly results that will be referred to during this call. Today's conference call is being webcast, so in addition to those on the line, anyone may listen to the call by accessing our website homepage and clicking on the webcast link. A replay of the webcast will be available on our webcast later today, on our website later today. Before we begin our comments, I'd like to remind everyone that today's press release and certain of our comments on the call will include forward-looking statements. We'd like to refer everyone to the cautionary language included in our press release and to the risk factors described in our SEDAR filings. On the call with us today is David Pathe, our President and Chief Executive Officer, and Dean Chambers, our Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. We will begin with a review of the results for the quarter and the year, and then move into a Q&A session to address any questions you might have. And with that, I'll now turn the call over to David.
All right. Well, thanks, Sean, and thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon on what I know is a busy earnings day. So today we're here to talk about the fourth quarter and our year-end results. This year we made solid progress against our stated strategic priorities, positioning us both financially and operationally for further growth in 2015. At the start of the year, we articulated our strategy to focus on nickel and sold our coal business. Since then, we've been diligently focusing on our key priorities that are designed to grow production and position us well heading into 2015. From a business perspective, we had record nickel production in our metals operation with a combined increase of 17% for the full year. During the second half of the year, we resolved operational process issues in Abitibi, which enabled production to achieve our guidance forecast. We made progress on the objective of extending the life of our Cuban oil and gas business by obtaining an extension to one production sharing contract and signing two new PSCs. And at our power business, we had a very strong year, with production increasing 44% and costs decreasing by 31% as a result of our new Boca combined cycle project starting operation. Looking back at the full year, our business showed marked improvements in revenue, adjusted EBITDA, and adjusted operating cash flow for the year. Combined revenue increased by 45% to $1.1 billion. Adjusted EBITDA increased by 17% to $253 million. And adjusted continuing operating cash flow increased by 62% to $75 million, or 25 cents per share. We also took proactive steps to strengthen our balance sheet, proactively managing our maturity profile and reducing debt by $790 million. Dean will speak a few more to some of these financial highlights a little later. Moving on to slide five, for those that are following along in our presentation, I'd like to touch now on our nickel operations performed during the quarter, beginning with Abitibi. Abitibi clearly had a strong quarter, with all our average oil throughput at 74% versus 66% in Q3, and autoclave operating hours increasing 7% to almost 7,500, demonstrating the improved performance of the downstream circuits and the increased reliability of the autoclaves that we have seen since the second quarter of 2014. Metallurgical recoveries in Q4 were consistent with Q3 at about 87%. Record nickel production of nearly 10,000 tons during the fourth quarter represented a 47% increase from the previous year and an increase of 6% over the third quarter. For the year, Abitibi produced 37,000 tons of finished nickel, which was within our guidance range. With the pullback in nickel prices in the fourth quarter, adjusted EBITDA was negative $7.5 million for the quarter and negative $5.5 million for the full year 2014. Our team on the ground delivered results in resolving process control issues in the CCD and raw liquor neutralization circuits by applying our technical know-how as well as making modifications to the process. We also made a conscious decision to bring forward a large amount of maintenance activity to the fourth quarter to position Embattled here for a long period of time in 2015 without any major maintenance, allowing us to clear the runway to target our financial completion tests. And as we announced last week, January's nickel production at 92% of capacity is demonstrating the effectiveness of these actions. This is a very positive development for Sherritt and positions us well in our path to 90% of production for 90 days. Right now, we're about 60 days into a run of production at approximately that 90% rate. Finished nickel production as a percentage of capacity lagged ore throughput as a percentage of capacity due to a number of factors, including temporary mixed sulfide inventory accumulation downstream from the PAL, lower ore grades, and lower overall metallurgical recoveries than designed. Continuous improvement in the metallurgical process is expected to gradually increase overall metallurgical recoveries. We've also successfully completed the construction of the second ore thickener on time and on budget. This new thickener is at the front end of the plant, and its purpose is to increase our percentage of solids in the feed to the autoclaves. The addition of the second thickener will increase underflow densities in the autoclaves, enabling higher throughput. On to page 7 now. I expect our C1 cash costs in 2015 to come in the $4 to $6 range, based on our production guidance that I'll touch on a little later in the call. That's consistent with our range on cost estimates that we've had out there for some time now. As 2015 progresses, with more months under our belt similar to January's success, our focus in 2015 will transition from ramp-up to a steady-state mindset focused on operational efficiency. Given the fixed-cost nature of this operation, the long reserve life, and our operational success in 2014, we continue to have every expectation that Embattled will be the long-life, low-cost source of operational cash flow we have always believed it will be. Moving on to Moa, Moa performed steadily again this quarter. We reported lower net direct cash costs in the fourth quarter compared to the third quarter, U.S. dollars $4.44 per pound, mainly due to higher byproduct credits and lower mining and processing and refining costs. Production for the year was just slightly less than last year, mostly due to the timing of mixed sulfides shipments from Cuba to Fort Saskatchewan and the availability of third-party feed. The operation reported adjusted EBITDA of $21 million in the quarter, which was an increase of 138% from the fourth quarter of 2013. Our acid plant investment to lower cost remains a key priority for us going into this year. We are still on track to start construction this quarter, and we recently executed a construction contract in Moa and are making progress on procurement. Over on slide 9, I wouldn't mind just touching on a few things that we're seeing in nickel markets as we move into 2015. Over the past quarter, we've seen softer pricing, with a decline in pricing in the fourth quarter of 12% compared to Q3. Nickel prices remained under pressure as LME inventories continued to climb, fueled by strong supply and destocking from China. The strengthening of the U.S. dollar in the fourth quarter also contributed to the decrease in nickel prices, which impacted all commodities. The nickel market supply deficit didn't materialize in 2014 as anticipated by some in the industry, but we're beginning to see that happen over the course of 2015, largely driven by the continued ban on Indonesian ore exports and a limited supply of new projects. Consensus forecasts are for higher nickel prices in 2015, given anticipation of that supply deficit forming. Moving over to our oil and gas business on slide 10. In 2014, we were successful in taking critical steps towards extending the life of our oil business in Cuba. In December, we secured two new production sharing contracts, together with an agreement to extend an existing PSC early in the year. Sherritt closed the year with three new agreements. The new PSCs obtained in December are known as Blocks 8A and 10 and are located east of Havana. They encompass areas of 967 square kilometers and 261 square kilometers, respectively. The new PSCs have a 25-year term and include commitments which primarily involve the reprocessing of existing seismic data and acquiring new seismic data within a two-year period. After the completion and evaluation of the seismic work, Sherritt has the option to continue the exploration or relinquish the PSCs. Finally, we also await approval on two more PSEs. We reported a decrease in gross working interest volumes by about 5% in the quarter, averaging just over 18,700 barrels of oil per day. This was mainly due to the mechanical failure in a Yermuri well that we mentioned in the third quarter. After the workovers did not yield desired results, the well was subsequently shut in during the quarter. The loss of production from this well accounted for a decrease of about 560 barrels of oil per day in the fourth quarter and 400 barrels a day for the year 2014. Operating costs in the Cuban oil business were higher, at about $9.94 a barrel, up from $7.51 in the prior year period. The major component of the increase is about $1.16 per barrel in increased workover costs relating to that Yermuri well. The two other large drivers of the cost and rising costs were the U.S.-Canadian dollar exchange rate and the impact of lower production with fixed costs being spread across a lower number of gross number of barrels. Excluding these items for the quarter and the year, the costs were up a little over 4%. Because of our low cost structure, our business still produces positive margins and positive cash flow in the current oil price environment. In 2014, we also celebrated producing our 200 millionth barrel of oil since we started operations in Cuba over 20 years ago. With respect to drilling activities, we completed drilling of three wells in the fourth quarter, and a total of six development wells were completed over the course of 2014, and all are currently in production. We also commenced drilling on two additional wells in the fourth quarter that should start producing this quarter. In total for 2015, we plan to complete 10 wells, primarily in the area covered by our recent extension. Moving to our power business on slide 11, our quarterly results continue to improve due to the higher production. Production increased 47% during the quarter compared to the prior year period, again primarily due to the bringing online of our new Phase 8 combined cycle facility, and were accompanied by a 10% reduction in unit operating costs. These factors led to seeing adjusted EBITDA of $5 million in the fourth quarter, compared to a loss of $3 million the same time last year. We reported significant improvements in adjusted EBITDA in 2014 at $25 million, compared to slightly negative adjusted EBITDA in 2014. That covers what I wanted to talk about from an operational perspective. Dean's now going to make a few comments on financial results, and then we'll come back to take a look at 2015.
Thank you, David, and good afternoon. Since we equity account for Moa and Mbatity, items such as revenue and cost of sales on our income statement only reflect the performance of our energy business and the corporate segment. We therefore use a number of non-GAAP adjusted measures to reflect the performance of our businesses on a consolidated basis, including Mbatity and Moa. The slide on page 13 of your presentation shows some of these measures, including combined revenue, adjusted EBITDA, and adjusted earnings from continuing operations. We have introduced the metric combined revenue to assist readers in getting a better sense of our revenue across all of our divisions. Adjusted EBITDA and adjusted earnings include a proportionate share from all of our operations and exclude impairments. Combined revenue increased by 47% in the fourth quarter and by 45% for the year. Metals and power businesses accounted for most of this increase. 2014 is the first year we are including revenue from Mbatity since achieving commercial production last January. Adjusted EBITDA decreased by 27% in the fourth quarter to $31 million, largely due to weakening oil prices. For the year, adjusted EBITDA increased by 17% to $253 million, led by the metals business that increased by 26% and the power business where adjusted EBITDA contributed almost $25 million. Adjusted operating cash flow per share improved to negative 8 cents from negative 15 cents. For the year, adjusted operating cash flow per share was 25 cents versus 16 cents in the previous year, an increase of 56%. When you look at adjusted earnings from continuing operations per share, you can really see the impact of including Mbatity's earnings beginning last February. For full year 2014, these adjusted earnings declined to negative 83 cents per share, compared to negative 22 cents in 2013. Of course, 2013 results do not include Mbatity. A reminder that Embattery earnings are heavily affected by large depreciation and amortization charges, which totaled over $380 million in 2014 on a 100% basis. We are in a much stronger financial position heading into 2015, largely due to the steps we took to improve our balance sheet. Debt was reduced substantially to $1.9 billion from $2.5 billion, and is a decrease of 25%. This is through our comprehensive debt refinancing we executed in the fall. Our debt-to-capital ratio has declined 15% from a year ago to 38%. Our cash balances at December 31st were $476 million, reflecting the use of cash in the fourth quarter to reduce debt while maintaining substantial liquidity. Now, taking a look at our fourth quarter earnings on page 14, this slide explains the reconciliation of the third quarter net loss through to the fourth quarter net loss figure. We then show what the adjusted net loss figure is for the fourth quarter when excluding adjusting items. Our fourth quarter net loss of $148 million was negatively affected by lower oil and gas prices, partly offset by lower taxable earnings in this business, lower earnings from MOA and Embattery due to lower realized prices. Now, there were several one-time non-recurring expenses totaling $68 million after tax, including the following items. Debenture refinancing fees of $34 million. As we discussed on our third quarter call, fees such as tender and consent fees and the premium to call the 2015 issue are reflected in this quarter. Oil and gas impairments, including about $12 million relating to a decision to discontinue exploration activities in the UK's North Sea and in Spain's Alboran Sea, as well as additional amounts for obsolete inventory and other assets. As mentioned on our third quarter call, restructuring expenses of $8.5 million related to our staff reductions have been recognized in this quarter. We've removed the gain from arbitration of $13 million that affected the third quarter earnings, and there are miscellaneous other items netting to a total of almost $7 million. This results in the Q4 net loss of $148 million compared to a net loss of $51 million in the third quarter. Now, if we exclude the one-time non-recurring expenses of $68 million, our Q4 adjusted net loss is $80 million, or 27 cents per share. Now, there are a few other items I would like to mention. The first item is foreign exchange. Given the recent decline in the value of the Canadian dollar, I thought it would be useful to review the corporation's sensitivity to the Canadian dollar exchange rate. A weaker Canadian dollar is a net negative for Sherritt's earnings. Our foreign exchange sensitivity comes from both transaction and translation sources. For example, since we sell commodities based on U.S. dollar prices, a decline in the Canadian dollar results in higher revenue and cash flow in Canadian dollar terms. With respect to translation, foreign exchange gains or losses result from revaluing U.S. dollar denominated assets and liabilities at the current exchange rate. Sherritt has more U.S. dollar-denominated liabilities than assets. As a result, decline in the Canadian dollar results in a non-cash foreign exchange translation loss. If you look at the sensitivity table contained in our MD&A, you will see that our sensitivity based on continuing operations for 2014 for a 5-cent change in the Canadian dollar exchange rate is a $10 million impact on annual net earnings. This sensitivity combines the impact of both transaction and translation. And this is consistent with the $15 million foreign exchange loss reflected in net financing expense for 2014. I would expect our earnings sensitivity in 2015 to be somewhat lower, partly due to higher Embattery production. The other item I would like to discuss is tax. I know that tax is complicated and confusing, especially with the multiple jurisdictions in which we operate and the way we account for our joint ventures. Let's break it down into its component parts for 2014. First, the income tax expense line on our earnings statement includes tax expense at corporate, oil and gas, and power. Corporate incurs losses because most of the financing is done in this segment, and we do not set up a deferred tax asset for these losses. As a result, the corporate impact on income tax expense is minimal. Power, primarily due to its relative size, is immaterial. As a result, the income tax expense for 2014 of $45.4 million primarily represents taxes related to oil and gas. In oil and gas, taxes were impacted by non-deductible foreign exchange losses and impairments that were not deductible. Next, earnings from Embattity and the MOA joint venture are on the earnings statement on an after-tax basis. The tax rate for the MOA JV might be expected to be in the range of, say, 35 to 40%, given the tax rates in Canada and Cuba. However, in 2014, the effective tax rate is much higher because of losses incurred in a non-tax jurisdiction for which a tax recovery cannot be set up, as well as other non-deductible items for tax purposes. Lastly, I would like to make a few comments on what I see for 2015. One obvious question is the expectation for funding of Embattity. We do expect funding levels to decline from 2014, but despite increased production forecasts and the corresponding reduction in net direct cash costs, funding from Sherritt is likely in the range of $50 to $100 million, depending on commodity prices. A reminder that partner funding of the project is affected in 2015 by the continued amortization of the senior debt by US $190 million and the required funding of the senior debt reserve account at financial completion of US $120 million. We are working with our partners on a number of initiatives to mitigate funding requirements if the nickel price remains at current low levels. I also look at our leverage to things like the nickel price and oil price. Based on our production guidance for the year, a U.S. $1 movement in the nickel price per pound is worth approximately $100 million Canadian annually to Sherritt. In terms of earnings, I would expect continued losses in 2015, especially if nickel and oil prices remain at current levels. As we have discussed previously, Embattity depreciation and amortization is expected to depress our earnings by more than $150 million per year. Lastly, we completed the sale of our Toronto head office, and this will result in a gain of approximately $19 million booked in the first quarter. I will now turn the call back over to David.
All right. Thanks, Dean. So, in summary, you've heard from us today and throughout the year on our progress. We've brought greater focus to Sherritt in our strategic direction, and we've made progress on a number of fronts. We focused the business on what Sherritt was built on, our nickel business. This includes the selling of our coal business in early 2014, and we are now focused on being a low-cost nickel producer. Embattity achieved guidance, solved process control issues, and is off to a good start in 2015, with January production at the highest levels ever achieved. We extended the life of our Cuban energy business through the extension of one existing PSC and the signing of two new exploration blocks. And we've reduced the leverage in our balance sheet, proactively managed our maturity profile, and maintained a strong cash position despite low commodity prices. Moving on to 2015, let me make a few comments on our 2015 guidance. We see increased nickel production in our metals businesses, particularly from further increases in Embattity and slightly higher production at MOA compared to 2014. At the midpoint of our guidance, this represents an 18% increase in our nickel production, confirming our position as the significant global nickel producer. Oil and gas production is modestly estimated at levels similar to 2014. However, we may see some potential to come in above this figure if we achieve success on the drilling underway this year. On slide 18, you'll see our capital guidance for 2015. This year, you'll note that we've planned capital of $231 million, includes capital above 2014's levels, largely for the MOA joint venture, and for our oil business. We are seeing a transition in capital away from Embattity over to these operations. In the MOA joint venture, our sustaining capital of $60 million is planned at a higher rate than 2014 due in part to purchasing of mobile equipment in MOA based on the lifespan of current equipment, and some impact from increased haul distances. Sustaining capital increases are also related to several maintenance projects required at the refinery in Fort Saskatchewan. We are also planning $20 million of capital spending for the acid plant, which you may recall is to be financed by a Cuban financial institution. In the oil business, we plan to invest in drilling primarily to build long-term production. With our current PSEs expiring in 2017 and 2018, we have work to do to perpetuate our business in Cuba and intend to have two drilling rigs working this year. Support equipment for that higher level of drilling is also included in this forecast. Taking into account the current oil price environment, our guidance remains at approximately $107 million for this business. We will balance the future production objectives for post-2018 with cash flow requirements for 2015 based on commodity prices. On slide 19, in 2015, we will build upon our success in 2014. Our priorities for 2015 are incremental increases in production at MOA, while also reducing our future costs by making progress on the new asset plan. Continuing the successful ramp-up production at Mbatovi to achieve the production rate of 90% of nameplate capacity for 90 days. We'll continue to extend the life of our Cuban energy business through drilling in our extended PSE area, and we also await two new exploration PSEs in Cuba. You've also heard a lot recently from us on our balance sheet. This is a theme for us every year. In this commodity price environment, we'll strive to maintain our improved balance sheet, continue to look for ways to run our business more efficiently, and continually review our spending plans in light of prevailing commodity prices. I'm optimistic about what lies ahead for us this year, with Mbatovi now further up the ramp-up curve and the progress we're making on our other business priorities. We look forward to updating you throughout the year on our progress. With that, operator, we'll come back to you and take any questions that are out there.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question-and-answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone today, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if any questions, please press star 1 at this time. Your first question today will come from Orest Wowkodaw with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My questions are around Mbatovi. Did I hear at the beginning you said that you're now 60 days into the 90-day requirement for the completion test?
At the moment, that's where we are, Orest. Yeah, we're almost 60 days beginning in mid-December, and we came out of our maintenance shutdown at the refinery. Since then, we've been running at about a 90% production rate for finished nickel.
And do you think you can maintain that during the autoclave scheduled maintenance that's this month?
Well, because of the success we've had there, we've actually adjusted the timing of that February autoclave shutdown. You're right that four of the five were to have their maintenance turnarounds in the third and fourth quarter. We have one more to do that we were originally going to start in late January that we postponed until early February. We've now, based on the run that we're on at the moment, pushed that off until late February on the basis of trying to sustain the run we're on at the moment.
Okay, so you might be able to keep it going until you meet the completion test.
That's what we're working towards at the moment,
Okay. And in terms of, did I hear you say, and I apologize if I misheard you, that you expect cash costs in Mbatovi at $4 to $6 this year?
That's the same guidance we've had for a while, but that's assuming that kind of 90% level of production through the range. That's the range we've given for the last year and a half or so at that level of production.
Okay, but based on your actual guidance for Mbatovi production this year, I mean, that would be below 90% in terms of your implied guidance. So we would expect then cost to be above that range in 2015, correct?
Depending on how exactly we play out, I think if we produce what we think we can there and in that range, we should be able to get into that range. It moves around depending on the input commodity prices and the cobalt price and those sorts of things, but that's what we think we can do.
Okay, and then finally, that $50 to $100 million funding requirements for Mbatovi, that's lower than I would have thought. Can you, what nickel price is baked into that estimate?
Well, or 15. One of the reasons I gave a range, because there really is a wide variety of factors here, including nickel price. But, you know, we've looked at a variety of scenarios, and I'm pretty comfortable at this point that it would be in that range.
Okay, but in terms of, say, the high end, the $100 million, how low of a nickel price does that allow to?
You know, the $100 million is kind of around the current levels.
Current levels. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doris.
Thank you. Your next question will come from Raymond Goldie with Salmon Partners. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good afternoon. My first question would be following on from Orest's question, wondering if the EBITDA at Embatavi was positive in January.
January we obviously had a good month. You know, costs, net direct, and we had a good month from a net direct cash cost perspective. But as you get into shorter and shorter periods, the cost numbers bounce around just based on timing of payments and timing of maintenance.
Fair enough.
We'll give you an update on Q1. But you know, even at spot nickel prices at this level of production, I would hope that we could be producing positive EBITDA at Embatavi at this stage.
And thanks for that. And second question also on Embatavi is that it looks as if you're going to be able to live up to pre-production estimates of your nickel production this year and following years. But what about cobalt?
So our cobalt guidance is there as well. Because it's all part of the same process, you know, as goes our nickel production, so our cobalt production. The ranges that we've produced are consistent with the levels of nickel production that we gave you there. And if we can sustain the production run on nickel at Embatavi, the cobalt should be there as well.
I guess my modeling might have been a bit too optimistic on cobalt because I'd expected that level of nickel production to correlate with higher cobalt production. So beyond 2015, what's a sustainable level of production of cobalt, do you think?
The cobalt numbers are marginally lower per nickel unit at Embatavi than they are at Moa for the next couple of years. And one of the things that we're actually looking at now is ways of topping up the cobalt stream in the refinery with some third-party feed at Embatavi. So we'll be looking at opportunities to do that. But the numbers you've got there and for our 2015 guidance are a function of the grades that we expect to be seeing fed into the plant this year.
I see. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you. Your next question will come from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Dean, you mentioned in your comments that you were in discussions with the partners about finding some other funding mechanism if the nickel price continues at this level. What exactly are you talking about with them?
Yeah, there's a wide range of things. Everything from, you know, there is some capital that could be deferred that doesn't have an influence on the ramp up. Ways that nickel is sold to the partners and a number of things like that.
But you're not looking at additional debt facilities provided by them to you?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
Secondly, the addition of the thickener at the front end of the plant, you talked about that having the potential to increase throughput. What are we talking about potentially there? Tons or percentage increase or what have you?
Yeah, so the thickener we've had up and running in January, and the second thickener we've built is a bit different in design from the thickener that was part of the project itself. You know, it's got higher walls and more robust rake and deeper cones and deeper different injection mechanisms and that. So we were running off of that in January, for at least part of January, and we saw underflow densities come up, I'm going to say 2 or 3%. What we're still working on and where we're hoping we'll get another potential couple percent out of it is getting to the point where we're running both thickeners in parallel and increasing the retention times in the thickeners. Most of the gain we've had so far is just moving from one to the other.
There's a bit of calibration to be done since they're not identical thickeners to get the two working in parallel, but we think there's a bit more upside there.
So the better run you've had is partly responsible because you're using the new thickener rather than the old thickener.
Right.
Right, gotcha. Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. Your next question will come from Cliff Hale-Sanders with Cormark. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Two questions. First on Embatavi, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. Based on what you said to Orest, you're 60 days into your 90-day test. So assuming all things go well and you pass your 90-day test sometime in late March and you pass the other outstanding test components, well, it's sometime early in Q2, what does that actually mean from a financial cash call position to Sherritt going forward? Obviously, the principal and debt repayments, it's non-recourse, but if you could just review the actual ins and outs of how that plays out, and then I have a follow-on question.
So the significance for everybody's benefit of this 90 for 90 test, which is running the plant at 90% of nameplate capacity for 90 days, that's one of a total of 10 tests that need to be satisfied for the project financing to go non-recourse. There's already a number of tests relating to the mine, the pipeline, the plant site, and a marketing test and the like that have already been satisfied, and we've still got the production and efficiency tests, environmental certificate, and a legal test to be satisfied that we're working on right now. Assuming all those come together between now and the end of September, the cumulative effect of that is that the partners' pro rata guarantees of that originally $2.1 billion project financing, which we used to finance the construction of Embatavi, would fall away, and the project itself would stand on its own 2 feet with respect to the obligation to continue the amortization schedule for the debt repayment. Assuming if all continues to go well in Embatavi and we get that production test done, there'd be a process to be gone through with the lender's independent engineer that goes down to the plant site every quarter. They're scheduled to be back there in April, and they'll be reviewing data and ideally we'll be looking to have them sign off on these, and that process of going through that with engineers and lawyers and signing off the test is what we're working on through the first 9 months of this year.
Okay, I guess just on that, it does not change the actual funding requirement from Sherritt.
It doesn't change the funding requirement, but it does cause the completion guarantees to fall away. And you recall those are there are completion guarantees are all covered by cross guarantees and LCs from our partners that are limited recourse to us.
Okay. But I just want to make sure that everyone's clear on that. And then the second one is more on the oil and gas space. Obviously, there's a fairly large uptick in capital spending there as you got the new production sharing agreements in place. Just wondering, if oil prices stay where they are, would you still expect to spend this much money? And what sort of flexibility do you have to not impact those potential new licenses?
We have some flexibility, but our plan right now is we have two drilling rigs, and we started up the second rig in sort of mid-2014 after we got that extension signed up. Our intention is to have those rigs, both rigs, going all year, and then there's some associated costs with that, and that's where most of that capital goes. We have some flexibility to adjust the timing of some of those, but even at current oil prices, the business is still producing sufficient cash flow to fund that, and so at the moment we are keen to make progress on those. We will see how our overall corporate balance sheet looks and our liquidity position as both a function of the oil price and the nickel price over the course of the year, but to make sure we're making the right decisions with respect to the short-term liquidity and the longer-term oil production profile.
Okay, but great.
Thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any additional questions at this time, you may press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. As a reminder, if you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. And we seem to have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to management for any closing comments.
Thank you, operator. We look forward to speaking to you again this April with the release of our first quarter 2015 results. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in the call today, and please feel free to contact us with any follow-up questions. And with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. You now disconnect your lines and have a great day.